Welcome to Conversations with Owens Community College President, Dr. Dion D. Somerville. Welcome to the newest episode of the award-winning Conversations podcast. I'm Dr. Dion D. Somerville. Thank you for listening today. Whether this is your first time with us or if you're a longtime follower, we are so happy that you're joining us as we explore the issues and meet the people who are important to Northwest Ohio and to Owens Community College. Please enjoy our previous episodes and subscribe to Conversations to join us for future episodes. We hope you'll take a few minutes to take our four-question listener survey. A link is in our episode notes, and you can access it at surveymonkey.com/r/conversationspod. Today, I am so excited to welcome Dan Schaefer, Director of Findlay-Hancock County Economic Development. Dan earned his bachelor's degree at Ohio Wesleyan University in 1981. He's been with the Findlay-Hancock County Economic Development since 2013, first as a project specialist for 10 years and then in his current role in the fall of 2022. Dan is a fierce advocate for economic development here in Northwest Ohio, from the support of existing businesses to the recruitment of new employers and growth. He plays a vital role in strong workforce and community partnerships, and we're thrilled that he agreed to join us for our conversation. Hi, Dan. Thank you for being our guest today. Dan, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Somerville. It's great to be with you.
So we're an educational institution. The first question we ask each of our podcast guests is, how did you know that you needed education post-high school?
Well, it really started before high school, and I went to boarding school in Connecticut, and that set the path for me knowing I was going to go to school. My family has a lifelong association with Ohio Wesleyan University. In fact, my great-great-grandfather was in the first graduating class at Ohio Wesleyan University, and then his son, my great-grandfather, my mom, and my grandmother were all graduates of Ohio Wesleyan, so it really wasn't much of a choice for me when I was going to go to college. I knew I was going to go from a very early age, and so Ohio Wesleyan it was, and I didn't even visit the campus. I showed up fall term freshman year with my suitcase and ready to go.
Mm-hmm. You already knew.
It was something that was imparted to me growing up as a kid, knowing that my grandparents, my parents, my cousins, friends had all gone to university, gone to college, and it was just expected. And I accepted the fact that I'd be going to college at some point, which I did.
So you have an interesting life path because there's the Connecticut boarding school, yet you are a multi-generational Findlay resident. Your family clearly has a legacy in this area if your great-great-grandfather went to Ohio Wesleyan. And so can you talk a little bit about that transition from going to school out east to being here in Findlay? And what did that do for you in terms of, you know, how did it shape your expectations even of college?
Well, going into college, I really had no expectations. I did not know what I wanted to major in. I did not know what I wanted to study. That was one of the things that, I guess, call it serendipity. I was left to my own devices to figure that out and actually decided at the end of my sophomore year to declare a liberal arts major, which I have a BA in history, of all things. And I've often reflected on that going back over time as to how that prepared me for almost every job I've ever had. And as any good liberal arts school will do, it really trains you to think, trains you to read, trains you to write creatively and do research. All the things that you do for your coursework that all of a sudden have real life implications in the real world, whether it's business or trades or whatever it may be. And so I think the preparation for college for me out of high school was preparing the pathway for somebody who had lived in a prep environment. And by the time I got to school, Ohio Wesleyan, when I was 18, I had already had the living away from home experience that most college students didn't have. And so I was ready to hit the ground running, but not even realizing it at the time that that's what I was doing.
Well, I think, you know, something that we've talked about a lot at Owens is how the value of higher education is helping you hone those critical thinking skills and helping you understand how to navigate life challenges, things of that nature, not what to think, but how to think. And that's something that I think educators, you know, throughout the world probably agree is one of the biggest things. And so as you kind of, you know, think through your experience being in Findlay, what about Findlay has changed? We've celebrated how it has been named the top micropolitan in the country for a long time and how that is a huge accomplishment. And there's a lot that plays into that. And so what do you think are some of the bigger pieces that have played into that and into Findlay's success?
That's a great question with not an easy answer, but the simple answer is really, some things are simple. They're just not easy, right? The simple answer is what people have referred to as the so-called Findlay formula, which we've trademarked, by the way, is really a stakeholder engagement process. It's an intentional process by which we tackle all large challenges or projects. A stakeholder engagement brings the right people at the right time to the table to discuss and work through whatever that challenge or project may be. In the world of economic development, that could be flood mitigation. In the world of economic development, that could be bringing a new large company to the area and bringing all the resources to bear at the table at the same time, whether it's civil engineering or the mayor or city council or county engineering or regional planning or the utilities or ODOT. Whoever's going to touch that project or touch that challenge, we want them at the table at the same time to work through that issue or challenge or project. We call that stakeholder engagement. And as a result, we're able to successfully achieve results that a lot of other communities are not able to achieve.
I think one of the key aspects of that is once you bring people together to talk about how to attack certain challenges and to be part of the solution, they have a sense of ownership in its success as well. And so has that been part of what you found in Findlay and working through that for years?
It's not just a sense of ownership. It's also a sense of responsibility. You touched a certain piece of this. That certain piece belongs to you now. I think there's that accountability that's unwritten and unsaid that resonates in that environment.
So education obviously is a part of that, from short-term training, workforce development, all the way through to, you know, larger pieces of workforce development with careers beyond associate's degrees and such. What role does education play in particular to economic development and long-term prosperity?
Clearly, education, if I look at my peers, I look at the young professionals that are coming into the community today and working with them and looking at where they're coming from, all from diverse backgrounds, all from diverse educational backgrounds, but the vast majority have post-secondary either credentials or degrees. Whether or not that prepares them for the role that they're in is a different matter. But it's certainly the environment, whether it's a two-year college or a four-year university or college, I think in some respects should and does prepare that individual socially, relationship-wise, for whatever careers they choose to go into. I looked up a few stats before I came in today, and I think it resonates to maybe the question that you just asked. And that is right now, at least in our region, in Northwest Ohio, 35.3% have high school diplomas, 19.7% have some college, almost 10% a two-year degree, and 18% have a BA, and 11% a graduate or higher level. I say that only to say this. I'd like to see the percentage of two-year degrees increase from 9.9% to something higher. And I think that's the challenge we have as we work into a workforce environment where we're looking for more structured credentialing, certificates, what have you, that go beyond 10% graduation rate to maybe 15 or 20 and start to, do you take away from the four-year college? No, I think you're just augmenting the opportunities for those students that should be accepting a two-year college versus potentially a four-year.
I think that's an important point. One of the challenges that I think every community college has is for people to understand who they are. And what I've noticed in my own conversations is that everyone has an Owen story, but they only know the part of it that they've touched. So there's this entire pathway from contracted training to certificates to associate degrees, and then our transfer pathway to a variety of four-year institutions. And so, you know, as you talk about that continuum, that associate's degree, I think, is a huge marker that someone can build on for transfer, for a stopping out point for them to be able to continue. Can you talk a little bit about what companies think about as they're looking at the same educational statistics that you've named, and how does that impact their decisions to either remain in Northwest Ohio or to locate into Northwest Ohio?
That's a great question. And speaking only for Northwest Ohio, you know, you look at the credentialing, you look at the various degrees. And again, if I can go back to my little bit of research and some data before this conversation, the Burning Glass Institute reported that the proportion of jobs requiring four-year college degrees fell from 51% in 2017 to 44% a couple of years ago. I found that quite interesting. And of that, 52% don't make use of the degrees or credentials that they come out with. And so what that tells me, especially looking back at my own career, is that those individuals, those students that graduate or come out are best served for the ones that have the interpersonal skills, the interpersonal relationship building skills, which is so important, the ability to solve problems, which a two-year school, a four-year school can help you through the critical thinking by working through projects, but then it comes to relating to actual individuals. And so I think all of our institutions, including the business community, can do a much better job And that starts, I think, even as early as elementary school. And some of the things that one of our workforce partners, Raise the Bar, has been working on since its inception, which was the elementary level school with Leader in Me programs, which start to develop those interpersonal skills and those relationship building skills, which are so hard to do. And I guess I'll go back to, it's simple to do, it's just not easy.
We talked a little bit about companies and the degrees. There was a big push for a while. You heard a lot about it in the news about companies not requiring bachelor's degrees. Particularly during the heart of the pandemic, they talked a lot about needing the skills, the abilities, and you talked about the universal skills, like being able to relate to people and, you know, those interpersonal and critical thinking skills. As you talk to companies, what are they looking for? You know, we talked about the importance and how they make sure they look for those things, but what are some of the skills and abilities that they look for in a workforce here in Northwest Ohio?
So I think to your earlier point about education and degrees and so on, that it used to be that you needed a high school diploma to apply for a job. Over the last 5 or 6 years, we've seen more and more of that being taken off of company policies, because at that point, they're looking for somebody to come in and do an entry-level job or some sort of job, whatever it may be. And those that are moving through and moving, progressing in those companies are the ones that are being trained by those companies higher than where they came in. And so I think that's the answer for a lot of companies. They want a person, I hesitate to say warm body, they want an engaged body that's coming in, that's willing to learn, that has the abilities to have some of those soft skills and then be promoted or trained through a pathway throughout the facility, whatever it may be. And that's where I think Owens and other institutions of higher learning can come in, obviously, to be receptive to those changes and those demands that are being seen on the factory floor, if I can use the word advanced manufacturing floor, and where institutions like Owens Community College can step in and partner, and I think you are and have been, to offer those types of trainings. And I think we're going to see more and more of that as we see more automation coming our way. Our labor shed doesn't increase at a very geometric pace. In fact, we're about the same as we were several years ago. So I think more is being required of those workers every day, and finding the best way to get them engaged, whether it's taking over and learning more about automation, CNC machinery, industrial maintenance, industrial technologies of all sorts, whether it may be those types of credentials, heck, even welding technologies, we can't engage enough of them. As soon as they come out of career techs, they're being gobbled up immediately. And they're making $60,000 to $80,000 a year without a college debt. So I think we're going to continue to see more and more of that as companies looking for broader ways to become more efficient with what they do. I'm not necessarily meaning lean their way that way, but to become more efficient with the resources they have, or more importantly, the resources they may not have.
You had made the distinction talking about the factory floor and the advanced manufacturing floor. And I think one of the strengths that we have as a region in Northwest Ohio is that we do have a lot in advanced manufacturing. But I think one of the disadvantages is that people don't always understand what that actually is. And so can you talk a little bit about how you define advanced manufacturing?
Yeah, advanced manufacturing is anything that's not your grandfather's dirty factory floor. And I say that tongue in cheek. And I've had the local media interviewing on different subjects and projects. And every time they bring up the F word, in this case, factory, I gently chide them and say, let's get away from using the word factory in the connotations it brings and start using the more important and more widely accepted advanced manufacturing, clean factory floors, clean rooms, bright sunlight. You're not going out to service that equipment with a tool belt. You're servicing that equipment with a laptop. And beyond that, when you're starting to talk about advanced manufacturing, especially in the media or on radio or in a podcast, if that audience happens to be high school students or early career professionals, they need to hear the word advanced. It's a matter of languaging. It's a matter of vocabulary. And so I choose to use advanced manufacturing for what it represents and what it connotates versus the old school factory.
So you talked about your liberal arts education and your degree in history and broad-based. I don't know if that kind of marketing and psychology was part of what you were taught at Ohio Wesleyan, but I think it's very much timely because you're getting into perceptions and what is it that people think and what is it that they need to hear to advance the region and the workforce. You talked about how you didn't go into college with a defined plan, that you were, quote unquote, left to your own devices. And what you've seen probably evolve in your years in economic development has probably everything to do with your ability to think critically and to create those relationships and be able to have a sense of lifelong learning and to pivot and to learn and to grow. How did you start in economic development and how has that changed over time?
That's another very good question. And I like that you mentioned perception. Everybody's got their own perception and you've heard the phrase that perception is reality. Well, is it? I like to push people back on their perceptions and talk about perspective because that's unique and it's unique to itself as opposed to thousands of perceptions that are out there. I came to economic development in a rather circuitous way. I'd been self-employed most of my business career, which I think my early upbringing prepared me for. My grandfather ran his own company. My dad was a dentist, ran his own business. So I grew up in a culture in my household of entrepreneurship, I guess, if you will call it that, that I would someday have my own business. It was just in the back of my brain that I would do that, which is why it didn't matter where I went to Ohio Wesleyan, other than I knew I was going to go there and that I would come out of that with a degree. And it didn't matter what that degree was. I was going to get a job. I was going to go into sales. I was going to do some kind of relationship building thing because that's what I grew up with. Long story short, I'd spent most of my career self-employed with several different businesses, two or three that I could talk about. But in 2013, I bumped into the former mayor of the city of Findlay, Tony Arritti, who was then the current director of economic development, had a conversation about small business and the small business environment. And oh, by the way, Findlay-Hancock County Economic Development Office was looking for a small business resource person. And I raised my hand, well, is that something I could do? Long story short, first time in my career I'd ever written a resume, first time in my career I'd ever had a job interview. And long story short, even shorter, I landed the job as a small business coordinator, a resource guy. And if you're starting up your business on the back of a napkin, you come see me and we can figure out together the best way to commercialize it, or more importantly, figure out that maybe this is not for you and let that entrepreneur or pre-entrepreneur person deselect themselves before they mortgage their house and put themselves at risk. And one thing led to another. Within a few months, I was doing all things economic development with the rest of the crew. So I came to it quite organically and quite unexpectedly.
It sounds as though it prepared you incredibly well, because having been a business developer yourself, you probably are able to relate in a way that people who don't have that background are able to. You've seen it, you've lived it, you know some of the pitfalls, the ins and outs, and you're able to help other people who are aspiring there really from a place of intimate knowledge.
Well, it's beyond intimate knowledge. It's really skinning your knees and rubber hitting the road kind of environment. And I tell people when I meet them for the first time that I've probably made more mistakes in business than anybody else. And my job is to make sure that you don't make them. So yes, experience can be quite the teacher.
So as you think of the last decade plus that you've been formally in economic development, what have been some of the biggest changes that you've seen?
Well, in the last 10 years, not so much. We've stuck to that Findlay formula, which we mentioned earlier. That's been the last 10 years, but it always wasn't that way. If you go back in time over history, clearly Findlay was a small village way back in the day. And like any small village, it continued to grow organically, farm community into more of a business community. And that really got put on steroids in the late 1800s when Ohio Oil, then later on Marathon Oil Company, now Marathon Petroleum, came to town, Northwest Ohio, and really put Findlay on the map, which brought business, which brought catalytic projects, other businesses, brought residents. Population doubled overnight in those days, and it continued to grow. And the schools at that point continued to grow. 1883, I believe, University of Findlay, formerly Findlay College, was stood up. That was my great-great uncle who built Old Main. There's a bit of a resonance with family ties to the community.
Absolutely.
But I get to talk about them. So you walk into Old Main, and one of the first portraits on the walls, a gruff looking black and white with a beard down to his chin. And that was my great, great uncle that did that. But I only say that because it has shown a community that's been on a continuum of change, a continuum of growth, a continuum of progress, if I can use that word. And then really got put on steroids, I think, in the late 50s, early 60s, when I-75 became a reality coming through Hancock County and touching Findlay on its way north and on its way south. And so a lot of the projects that we've worked on over the last 10 years, especially new companies coming to town, I'd like to say it had a lot to do with the dedicated folks in the city of Findlay and Hancock County and economic development. But the fact that we are geographically located where we are brings a lot of projects we might not ordinarily see. to the community. So from that standpoint, economic development continues to evolve. I think the process remains the same. Stakeholder engagement, try to maintain dignified and business relationships with all your stakeholders, including your county representatives, city and administration representatives, and everybody in between. And that's a tall order, trying to keep the disagreements out of the newspaper. Not that we can't disagree with each other. We do often, but we do it behind closed doors. So it's intentional. And I think I'd like to say that economic development and our office does a pretty good job of driving those relationships and maintaining them as much as we can. So if there's been any evolution over the last 150 years, it's been the evolution of how we work with each other in business.
That history is incredible, including some of those key milestones of education, of corporate growth, and transportation. I mean, it gets us back to the whole logistics conversation and proximity to I-75 in that corridor. One of Findlay-Hancock County Economic Development's goals has been to reduce workforce migration. Can you tell us a little bit about how is that going to be achieved?
This is a very good question, and we, meaning the office, started to look at that question back in 2014 and predicted that by the August of 2015, the available jobs and available workforce would hit a tipping point and overlap each other. And it turns out that they did exactly in August of 2015. We also knew at the time that approximately 25,000-26,000 individuals or employees or associates were traveling into the community daily to work Monday through Friday. And so we knew that, and I think it doesn't take a mathematician to figure out that the more people you have living in your community, the better you are organically growing your local economy by people living and consuming in the place that they work. And so starting in 2016 and 17, we really made a concerted effort to reach out to residential developers that may have had a slightly greater financial bandwidth than some of our local developers who have done a great job over the years. But in terms of scaling to the number of housing, whether it's multifamily, senior, 55 and over, senior living, affordable, well, you name it, we need all of that going forward. And so since 2016 and 17, we've started to do more and more of that. We've come on the radar of some of those developers with the bandwidth to do the work coming out of primary markets like Cleveland and Columbus and Cincinnati and even Toledo, recognizing that Findlay is an emerging market, that it is a second tier market for them. And so we have been noticed over the last few years, and we've had a number of projects that we've been successful in building in those categories I just mentioned. And so that's a long way of saying that 25,000 that we're commuting to Findlay on a daily basis is now down to 21,000. And I attribute that primarily to more people living in Findlay, some due to COVID and people working remotely. But in most cases, as soon as a house is built, as soon as a multifamily project is started, leases are being signed, mortgages are being let, and those residential opportunities are being taken advantage of by folks that used to work out of town that are now beginning to live in town. So the answer to the question is workforce development for us right now is residential development for those reasons.
Well, and I would imagine it also makes a difference in terms of quality of life and the kind of community that folks are able to experience.
Yeah, I would say so too. You look at Findlay over the last 10 years, based on some of the catalytic work and projects that the city and the county put together, some of which have been led by the Economic Development Office, really is to create Findlay as a destination for the region. And organically, since Marathon Campus rebuilt itself 10 years ago, $140 million project to rebuild their campus, not including the Hancock Hotel, really was a catalytic project because within a couple of years, our downtown streetscape totally reinvented itself. There was a renaissance of curb bump outs, mid-block crosswalks, vegetation, all designed to make it safer for pedestrians. Prior to Marathon doing their campus build out, our downtown Main Street was as wide as I-75. And so people would blow through there going 45 and 50 miles an hour, relatively unsafe for pedestrians. That has all flipped over the last several years to a very pedestrian, aesthetically pleasing environment, which translates into a destination for people that they may either be commuting into work every day, that are looking for a place to have lunch or have dinner, or a destination on the weekends to come down and visit the Performing Arts Center or the Entertainment District, where we have live music and brewing companies and things that didn't exist even 5 years ago that is making Findlay more of a destination. On top of that, from an attraction standpoint, when a company comes to town to evaluate, do they want to set up operations here? One of the first things they want to look at is your downtown, because this is really a reflection of the health if you will, the pulse of the community. So I think our downtown shows very well. It will continue to show well. We've got other projects we'll work on. But workforce development is residential development. We'll continue that for the foreseeable future.
That is wonderful. Well, in terms of some of the new projects, Findlay-Hancock Economic Development was instrumental in landing the Sheets Distribution Center to Findlay. What can you share with us about that experience? And obviously, it's a big deal and a lot of very good news for the area. But are there particular aspects of that process that you're particularly proud of?
The interesting thing with Sheets Incorporated out of Altoona, Pennsylvania, their corporate headquarters, as with all projects, regarding McLean or Campbell Soup or RL Carriers or ZF, and Sheets is no exception. By the time a project like that gets announced in the local paper, my office has been working on it for probably well over a year. And then once it does hit the newspaper, most people go, well, where are the bulldozers? When is this going to start? Well, we got another year to work on that because we have to annex the land. We have to get permitting. We have to have zoning. We have a lot of due diligence. We've got water and sewer to install. We've got a lot of boxes to check before you get to the end of the road where you can actually put a shovel in the ground and start putting the building up, which in this case, hopefully will be sometime in June or July of this summer. I think for me, most of that work is done below the radar. It's the sausage being made, if you will, and most people don't see it happening. They just see it announced and are waiting for the next thing to happen. So in the case of McLean, that was a 36-month project from beginning to end. Sheets will be no different. When they start up operations in 26, we will have been working with them for 3 or 4 years at that time. So it's a process. Slow and steady wins the race. In the case of Sheets, Sheets was one of probably 30 or 40 projects we looked at in 2022. And it just so happened it was at the very end of 2022 in December that Sheets made themselves known to us and that they wanted to come visit the community in early 23, which they did. And the rest is history. So for me, it's really personally satisfying just because you work through all the various steps, all the various things you need to do. Working with city council for the annexation, working with the city, working with the engineers, working with regional planning, all the stakeholders that I mentioned earlier, because we've had those early meetings. And so it's a pleasure then to work through the project because you already have those relationships that are so important.
So with landing the Sheets Distribution Center, what does that do for other similar businesses? Do they just kind of say that's nice? Does that increase activity for them, you know, in terms of competition? Like what is that dynamic actually like?
Yeah, Sheets is going to be a production facility. They'll be making food products there in service of the expansion. The company will be growing into southeastern Michigan, all points in Ohio, into Indiana. And so this particular project in Findlay will help support that growth and that expansion. You look at Sheets, you look at Casey's, you look at 7-Eleven, you look at Speedway and the others. It just tells me you've got, in most cases, two people at home that are working but not cooking. They got to make arrangements to do something, at least during the daytime while they're out and about. But and Sheets has already announced that they will be building two of their local stores here in Findlay by the Findlay Village Mall and then on the north side of town. They're already constructing one in North Baltimore. So within 8 miles of each other, within the next few months, there'll be a few of those locations popping up. But in terms of competing with each other, some projects that come to Findlay, we don't see every single project. The national brands, the Starbucks, the Casey's, for example, typically we're the last ones to know. It's more on the retail side. And so it's like, oh, what's that growing up over there? Oh, that's a Casey's. Well, that's good to know. In the case of Starbucks, they've got their national team. They find a spot of ground. They work with regional planning. They work with permitting. And boom, you see an announcement. And all of a sudden, you got a Starbucks. So we don't work on every single project. But when we are asked to get involved, obviously, we like to roll up our sleeves and become involved.
Well, I am glad of these efforts that are happening. So we talked a little bit about your history and how you got into economic development through being an entrepreneur and having small businesses. And so this is something clearly that's near and dear to your heart. One of the things that we have here at Owens is an entrepreneurship certificate. And we know that we have lots of folks who want to start their businesses or already have businesses. What advice would you give students who are interested in the entrepreneurship certificate or people who are interested in becoming an entrepreneur overall?
That's a very good question. And I think as a result of this conversation today, I would like to become more aware of the Owens Certificate for Entrepreneurship because the 9 out of 10 folks that end up coming into the office with that mythical idea on the back of a napkin are quite frankly not going to make it for various reasons. Would they benefit from having a certificate or a class or coursework that would prepare them for that? I think the answer in the short term is yes. And so I view that certificate as something that I can offer as one of my tools. And after this conversation today, we're going to talk about how to do that. That being said, Entrepreneurship is, that's advanced citizenship. It's hard. And most people fail at it just because they don't plan. And business planning is the essence of all of it. And people hear that, they see that. But when you show them a Google template, of which there are millions, and they all read the same, and they pick that up for the first time and see, oh my goodness, there's a lot of work involved with this. And so in many cases, those individuals who I start with that template, I don't hear back from them. And that's okay. They have decided or deselected themselves for a reason. And again, they didn't do it before they mortgaged their house or spent a lot of money. They realized that maybe this was not for them. I will never tell anyone that this is not for you, but we get them to a spot where they can decide for themselves through the business planning process where they can. So it's advanced citizenship. I don't know that entrepreneurship can be taught, but you can make students prepared. And I think that's what you have to look for, because entrepreneurship is lots of unknowns.
And you have to weather a lot. You know, there was a lot of talk about the whole gig economy and people, quote unquote, making their side hustle their main hustle. And you hear less of it now. So do you think it's kind of gone that same direction where people thought, hey, this is a great idea, and then some of the realities and unknowns happened and kind of have dampened it a little bit?
Yeah, and I think Entrepreneur Magazine, entrepreneur.com, made lots of articles about so-called side hustles and gig economy. And I think those side hustles and the gig economy have existed for thousands of years. I've had side hustles. I've had gig jobs in the past from here to there. And I think a lot of people have. But small business, however you define it, I mean, it's 2/3 of our economy by and far and large, has the most amount of new employees coming into it. And those small businesses are in support of our larger industries. Look at all the tier ones, look at all the tier twos and threes. Look at all the support for services, whether it's accounting or legal. You look at, in the case of Sheetz, I'm going to hire and put on an intern who has yet to know who they are yet, because I haven't identified them. When Sheetz starts to build their building, to go out and measure all the trades, all the vans, all the plumbers, all the HVAC, all the earth movers, all the electricians, all the different businesses that are going to touch that project, not just to build it and put it up, but then the follow-on services to maintain that building, which will be all third party for the most part. You've got that economic impact. It's hard to measure. Sometimes you just have to go out and take a picture and see who's out there. We're going to do more of that. But no, back to small business. It's really something that is near and dear to my heart, as you put it. And my office especially will advocate all the time for that entrepreneur every single time. Of the 3 or 4 calls a month that I get for those individuals, 2 or 3 times a year, you end up with a successful business in Findlay. And in the last 10 years, it's been centered around, for the most part, entertainment. Bourbon Affair, Baker's Cafe, Findlay Brewing, Vivir Modern Mexican, Firehouse Subs. You know, this all has food and entertainment related. But like I said, Findlay's become more of a destination as a result of that.
So as you look ahead, what are some of the key priorities and goals for economic development in Findlay and Hancock County? And how is it that you need, you know, stakeholders, including educational institutions like Owens, like University of Findlay, to support these objectives?
Findlay-Hancock County economic development's priorities were 10 years ago what they are today and what they will be for the foreseeable future. And that's really our core purpose, which is attraction of quality companies to the community, retention of existing companies, workforce development, community planning, which we can talk about if you want, in downtown Findlay, which we did talk about, and small business. Those 6 key areas are the priorities that my office has every single day. If something comes into the office that doesn't fit in one of those buckets, we will typically refer it out to an agency or a business that can manage that for us or for that particular individual. People always talk about attracting new companies, but that's the least of which of what we do. I had a phone call on my way up here this morning talking about attraction projects over the last 10 years. Only 6. So you look at the work you put in, the 36 months, the 24 months you put into attracting a new company, 10 years goes by and you do the math and all of a sudden, gee, we had 6 new companies of some stature come to Findlay. And I mentioned them earlier, a few of them, McLean, for example, Campbell Soup, Sheetz, for example. They're hard. These are projects that you work on when you get them and when you can work on them. But we're more selective. We're in a community right now where we've been successful. We can afford to be a little bit choosy. No, we don't want that low paying whatever over here. We don't want that low wage job over there. We can afford to be a little bit more choosy and selective. And so as long as it falls into those categories, but retention of existing business, that absolutely is job one. That's the prime directive. It's a lot easier to maintain an existing relationship with a current company than it is to go out and find a brand new one. So we spend a lot of time getting to know the CEOs, the plant managers, the operations, the HR people at those organizations. And they understand, because we tell them, if we don't know, we can't help. Again, relationship, relationship, relationship. And so that's a piece of advice I would offer anybody coming into any career is learn how to build relationships. And the best way to do that is to get involved. You can get involved with a local nonprofit board of directors or a committee or young professionals group. It doesn't matter. That's where you're going to find your future resources for human capital. But back to your question, those six key areas are what we focus on every single day. It's our core purpose, which drives our mission, which is driving growth and prosperity in not just Findlay, but Northwest Ohio. We're really becoming more regionalists. And how can education help that? Well, we've got a great partnership with Owens Community College. I get to sit with you on the Raise the Bar board. Obviously, higher education is a challenge because at some level, there's co-opetition. You are competing with the 4 years as well as the other 2 years. How you do that sets you apart. You're here in the region working with Raise the Bar and others. You know, Owens Community College has really been there on the map. It's a question of utilization. It's a question of working with our companies, which is what we do every day, and understanding what do those employees need in terms of upskilling, and obviously being just in time and in the right place to deliver that, which is obviously a challenge for all institutions. And I think the new Center to Advanced Manufacturing, which has stood up between Owens Community College, Bowling Green State University, and University of Findlay, is a really good step in that direction.
We agree. I think, you know, first of all, we're very privileged to be able to have partnerships like with Findlay, Hancock County Economic Development, in addition to our work together on Raise the Bar. That workforce development piece is part of why higher education exists, to make sure that people are prepared for whatever it is their next steps are. And we're very grateful for the partnership we've had with Findlay, Hancock Economic Development, Raise the Bar, and with you in particular. I think that the conversations, the leveraging of relationships, understanding insights for emerging businesses, as well as how are we part of that retention conversation as well, are hugely important. And we really appreciate what we've been able to do together for the last however many years that we've all been working together for the health of the region.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that, too. And the opportunity to work with you over the last, we've been here 2 years now.
Three years.
You've been very good to work with.
Thank you.
I've enjoyed it very much.
Thank you. Likewise. All right. You mentioned community development as part of the priorities for Findlay Hancock County Economic Development. What does that look like?
So community planning, it's really not so much development as it is more planning.
Mm-hmm.
It's really taking on challenges that are longer term, and by longer term, anywhere from 5 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. In that range, that one organization by itself couldn't manage on their own. Case in Findlay, very easy to point to, is flood mitigation.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of resolving a 100-year storm, which meant that back in 2017, and this was incubated, by the way, out of the Economic Development Office, that stakeholder engagement, which brought in the agricultural community, mm-hmm. to meet with the business community, the county leadership with the city leadership, and getting all four of those groups together around a table to come together with some semblance of how they could work together before they decided what that work was going to look like. It took close to a year to get trust built around the table. But at the end of that year, we discovered that there were about 80% of everything they talked about that we all agreed to.
Mm-hmm.
So let's set aside the 20% of those things we don't agree on and work on those 80%. And as a result of that, Blanchard River Watershed Solutions was stood up as an organization incubated out of our office. And a white paper was written and agreed to by those stakeholders that I mentioned, agriculture, business, city, and county, in the form of a white paper, which was then presented and memorialized in the form of the editorial board of our local paper.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't just enough to agree quietly around the table, but it had to be memorialized and everybody had to stake their signature to it. And so over the last 7-8 years, we've completed a number of projects that are reducing that 100-year storm. And by the time it's done in 2 years, by 3 feet, which will have mitigated that the water that we had in our downtown back in 2007. That's an example of community planning. Another example of community planning, I'll be brief about this, is our Main Street Bridge and north of that, which is currently in the floodway. When that comes out of the floodway, we have a plan in place to share with developers and others of what that could look like in terms of development, whether it's city parks or commercial or retail or office or residential, you name it. We've got, mm-hmm. a plan that if you're a developer, I can share that plan with you and you can say, okay, when this comes out of the floodway in 2 years, here's what we can do in this area. So that's another example of community planning where we brought that plan to bear with the city, the county, business partners, and others to come together with a sense of what that plan would look like. Again, looking forward. One last piece that you may have heard me talk about is a big, hairy, audacious goal. Again, that's more long-term planning, 10 to 15 years or longer. You know, what is a big, hairy, audacious goal that just seems so far out of reach? But if you don't focus on it, if you don't put something on the horizon, you can't shoot at it. And I'm thinking of an arena district, and I've shared this with others. You know, think of semi-pro baseball, semi-pro hockey. And we've got land in our downtown that, in partnering with the county and the city, that we can have these conversations with. And the more you talk about them, the more they start to resonate, the more they start to resonate, the more people get on board with it. And all of a sudden, that big, hairy, audacious goal maybe someday becomes a reality. But that's an example of community planning.
That is awesome. Well, and kudos on the flood mitigation efforts. 3 feet is very significant.
It is.
It is very significant.
It is.
Dan, it was my absolute pleasure having you here on the Conversations podcast. I thoroughly enjoy our partnership and everything that we're able to do together for the benefit of the entire region, but particularly our work down in Findlay and Hancock County. And my appreciation to you for being here today.
I couldn't have said it better, Dr. Somerville. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Dan, thank you so much for being with us today. And thank you for your support of Owens Community College and for everything that you're doing to ensure the economic health of our region and of our state. This has truly been a pleasure. And thank you to all of our listeners. Please remember to subscribe and join us for future conversations. And please take our quick 4-question listener survey. That link is also in our program notes. Until next time, take care.